Another place where history gets revised and distorted is in the criminal justice system, where for decades, justifying arrest and incarceration for people who might be better served by anti-poverty programs, rehab, and mental health care has led to one of the highest incarceration rates in the world.
I mean, we have a crisis of monumental proportions.
That's New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
In the course of human history, there hasn't been this kind of extreme where a nation has imprisoned this many of its own people. And even you're talking about imprisonment, there's also American jails, which have 19 times the admissions in prisons do, and even arrests. We're now at the point in our culture where we're arresting, you know, about 75 to 100 million Americans have been arrested. And this problem is not going to be solved with one tool.
President Obama wants to change the course of history with a full reexamination of the criminal justice system, and he's meeting with a group of 130 law enforcement leaders to reduce crime, who issued a report this week that calls for alternatives to arrest and prosecution and the reclassification of crimes to lower the prison population significantly from the 2.2 million who are behind bars in this country today. Mark Maurer is the executive director of the Sentencing Project. Mark, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So what does it mean that 130 law enforcement leaders have called for this kind of change? What's shifting in the United States, do you think?
Well, I think there's growing momentum for reconsideration of our incarceration policies. For four decades, we've adopted policies designed to send more people to prison, keep them there for longer periods of time. I think there's a growing recognition that whatever benefit incarceration has, we're very much past the point of diminishing returns for public safety, and that we need to address many of these problems on the front end. And law enforcement and prosecution have tremendous discretion to do some of that. So I think it's very significant that they're calling for a shift and taking on some of the responsibility for change in this direction.
If you were to take a snapshot of American sort of demographics, who gets put in prison, who ends up behind bars, who ends up in jail?
Well, you know, if you were just to look at the offenses for which they're incarcerated in the federal system, which is smaller, about half the people are there for drug offense. In state prisons, about half are there for violent offense. But if we ask the question, who are these people? What are their backgrounds? We know about three quarters of them have a history of substance abuse. One of every six has a history of mental illness. If you look at women in prison, more than half have a history of physical or sexual abuse. We could go on, and I think it points to a very devastating portrait of family and community disadvantage, institutions that haven't intervened effectively, and then it becomes a criminal justice problem at the back end.
And is this racially, does this reflect a sort of racial cleavage in the American population?
Well, it does dramatically so. About 60% of the people behind bars are African American or Latino. As we speak, one of every 10 black males in his 30s is incarcerated in prison or jail today. Does this mean the criminal justice system is racist through and through? Well, not necessarily, no more than any other institution in American society, but many of the policies, many of the discretionary decisions have had racial effects. Yes, part of this reflects involvement in crime, which in turn is a socioeconomic problem too. So it all comes together, but it produces devastating results that suggest to me that it should be in everyone's interest to determine how we can reverse some of these trends.
If we aggressively address some of these things on the front end, drug rehab, substance abuse, sexual abuse, and domestic violence, how quickly and how much could the prison population be reduced, do you think?
Well, we could start just by reconsidering our sentencing policies. You know, the mandatory sentencing, three strikes and you're out policies of recent decades have adopted a one-size-fits-all approach to sentencing. And so we have aging offenders well past the point at which they're a risk to public safety. So, yes, at the front end, we need to be intervening with drug treatment, mental health services, but we could start tomorrow by cutting back on excessively lengthy sentences that by us little for public safety, but come with a tremendous financial cost and human cost. And we could invest some of those savings in exactly some of those front-end interventions.
And we're talking about 30% of the population here, right off the top.
30% has had some engagement with the criminal justice system. What we know now, too, is that even an arrest can come to haunt you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. When you apply for a job, employers do background checks and the like. This is a real mark against you, and all sorts of consequences flow, even for an arrest that takes place when you're 18 and may never have anything after that.
Mark Maurer is the executive director of the Sentencing Project. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
There is bipartisan support in Congress to reform the criminal justice system. We'll explore it in just a moment. Our next guest generously agreed to speak with us in advance of his meeting with President Obama. Rick Ramish is executive director of the Colorado Department of Corrections and a founding member of the group Law Enforcement Leaders to Reduce Crime. That group is meeting with the president today. Rick Ramish, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
You were very impressed with the president's visit to a prison and his thoughtful comments when he did visit. What would you want to tell him about what it looks like in perhaps one of the facilities you would most like to reform?
Well, what I would like to offer is an invitation for him to come to the state of Colorado and see what we're doing within our systems as far as segregation reform and how that can be, I believe, successfully implemented nationwide.
When you say segregation reform, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, for instance, in Colorado in 2011, approximately 1,500 people, or almost 7% of our prison population, was in what we call administrative segregation, or call it solitary confinement, call it the hole, call it restrictive housing, call it whatever you want, but it's basically individuals being isolated in a 7-by-13-foot cell, 23 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we've reduced that population to less than 1% of our population, and no longer put anybody that's seriously mentally ill into segregation, and nor do we release anybody directly from segregation into the community.
What is the impact of releasing people directly from solitary into the community, and what is the impact not only on the person who has to face just this incredible culture shock, but also law enforcement?
Well, what I've said cynically is, why don't we just, if we're doing that, why don't we just stamp return to prison on their forehead and let them out? It's not a good way of doing business, obviously. We haven't done it for over 18 months. And my thoughts on that, as we discussed it with our staff, is that, you know, the overuse of segregation basically was used to run institutions more efficiently. To do that, that meant that instead of just violent people being placed into segregation, it was those that maybe shot their mouths off, maybe broke some minor rules, were put into segregation under a system that basically didn't allow them to work their way out. And that's how they ended up spending years in these facilities. And what I explained to our staff and what we talked about was that running an efficient institution is a noble goal, but that's not what our mission is. Our mission is community safety, and we've lost sight of our mission, so we stopped doing that.
Rick Ramish is executive director of the Colorado Department of Corrections. This is The Takeaway. How does mental health and the need for mental health care in the prison system bear on the reforms that you're envisioning?
You can't really talk about segregation reform without addressing the mentally ill. You know, every one of us in my position and those that run county jails, we all stood up, and deservedly so, and we slammed our fist on the podium and said that, and we run the largest mental health systems in our state, and we do. But then what I had to do is look in the mirror each morning and say, okay, and now that we're doing that, what am I doing with them? And unfortunately, when you look into the mirror, you understand that in a lot of instances, because the mentally ill are disruptive within institutions, they end up in segregation. And so what we've done is we have two facilities that are dedicated to the mentally ill, their treatment, and we basically have stopped the use of segregation in those facilities, and actually the positive results are tremendous.
Finally, Mr. Ramish, if you were to give me a kind of ballpark gut feeling about where this reform could go, I mean, if you could wave your magic wand and go into your most crowded institutions and take the mentally ill who clearly need to be in some sort of clinical setting, take the people who you could look straight in the eye and say, I can see a pathway for these people to go back to the community safely. And then the violent people who you understand are clearly a threat to the community, a threat to community safety. How much would that shrink your population, do you think, in the state of Colorado, if you could do that tomorrow?
Well, let me give you a little bit of data. About 34 to 36% of our total inmate population are suffering from some type of mental problem. 14 to 18% of those individuals have severe mental illness. And so just that figure alone drop our numbers substantially. To simplify things again, you know, what we've talked about is we have to determine who's bad and who we're simply mad at. And the ones we're simply mad at, it's maybe time to find another alternative for them. And that would mean the nonviolent offenders, of course.
Who came up with that? The people who are bad and the people we're simply mad at? Because that seems to get to the crux of this whole crime problem in the United States as we try to pivot here.
You know, I really wish I could take credit for that, but I can't. When I first heard that sentence, it really struck home with me, and I thought that's the answer. That really simplifies things, and that's what we have to do.
That's brilliant. Figure out the difference between who we're mad at and who's bad.
Correct.
You going to tell that to the president?
If I get the opportunity, I sure would like to.
Rick Ramish is executive director of the Colorado Department of Corrections. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.